We have before us a motion for the adoption of Amendment Number 2. I'm going to place a call of the House on the motion to adopt Amendment Number 2 to the House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 299, State Affairs. And we are under debate on Amendment Number 2. Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Although in concept I'm kind of agreeable to the maker of the motion, I think right now it is much too sudden for the people to suddenly change their voter registration cards. And the gentleman from downtown Anchorage is certainly right that probably 55 to 60% of our people will not be able to participate in this primary election. One of the major reasons is that we usually allow, or the law allows, 90 days for a referendum to change the law. And at our closing date now, the people will not have an opportunity to start a referendum to change this law that, with the effective date now, would take effect immediately, right before the primary election. So it's just very unfair to that group right now. But then also, I think a lot of discussion by the people of this state who have become independent in many different ways, we need a much open forum than what we have here to allow them to discuss, do they want to return to the original intent of primary election, which I did like. Prior to 1968, we did this, but then the voters themselves changed. I just think it's too premature right now to suddenly throw this upon the voters, and in this primary election, disenfranchise over 50%.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, to correct one statement that the last speaker made, unless there's something in here that I'm missing, it would not be necessary for a single person to change their voter registration. A person who's registered as a Democrat could still, if he chose, vote for nothing but Republican candidates in the next election. A person who's registered as an independent could, if he chose or she chose, vote in either the Republican column or the Democratic column. It would not be necessary under the terms of this bill, because it's the same as the old primary, which Nick Begich called the Alaska primary. The only requirement is that you just vote in one column, that you can't be splitting your vote all over the place. I think, Mr. Speaker, that eventually passage of this legislation would have one very commendable effect, and that is, although a person is not required to register as a Democrat or Republican, it would tend to get people thinking again in terms of the value of their political parties, their political platforms. And I think that whereas the present situation is that most people are registered independent because there's absolutely no reason for them to be anything other than independent. There's no incentive whatsoever for them to be to take a partisan political view of the ballot. This action, although not requiring it, would create a climate where people would have, again, as they used to have before the law was changed, an incentive to identify themselves as either Republican or Democrat. But again, getting back to the previous speaker's remark, it would not be necessary for anybody to re-register, change any identification that they presently have in their voting habits.
Is there further debate? Representative Freeman? The House, please stand at ease. To order. During the at ease, there was an amendment to Amendment Number 2 placed on the clerk's desk. Will the clerk please read the amendment to Amendment Number 2?
The amendment to Amendment 2 is by Fanning and Freeman. This section takes effect on January 1st, 1983.
Representative Freeman.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the amendment.
State your point, Representative O'Connell.
Mr. Speaker, I might be wrong, but I think the House is under a call on the amendment itself, and unless the call is satisfied, we either have to lift the call or hold it.
This time I'll lift the call on the House. Representative Freeman, will you restate your motion?
Mr. Speaker, I'd move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the amendment.
Representative Freeman, no his objection.
Mr. Speaker, I've witnessed and watched and been an observer and a participant in the so-called open primary process for quite some time, and I have spoken out at long last publicly stating that we have to, in my view, we have to do something to change the election laws, are just write off the party system in our form of government. I don't think it's hard to understand for any of us what's happening. And I don't think it's a healthy thing. You know, if you don't believe in the party system, you don't believe in it. But if you do, and I do, I think we have to either, number one, accept the fact that we do have a problem, or just forget it. And if we have a problem, we try to do something to solve it. And I understand that it's not easy, and it's certainly not easy for me at this particular point in time, to stand up and make an argument that's going to tell a majority of the people in the state that they're going to have to take some responsibility and choose sides if they want to be involved in this process. I've often said, and said it jokingly, but I sometimes think that the system we have right now, the best thing we could probably do, it's not going to happen, but if we could, was to pass a law that would absolutely obliterate and forbid the use of any party designations as they now stand. The problem that we have in present is that the majority, the philosophical majority of this people, of this body, for a number of years has not been in control and is not directed. And that's not hard to understand why. We sort of have a mixture here that doesn't make any sense. As legislators, we go out and run, and we put some kind of a designation behind our name when we file. We forget it from then on, and each one on his own. And then when we get back down, get here in the chambers, then we line up again behind those party designations. And philosophy of the individuals has absolutely nothing to do with it. I've seen that happen time and time again. So it seems to me that the proper thing for us to do is to get back to where we do have, where people can identify us with party philosophy, and the parties, the people who belong to the parties, have some involvement and some say in who's nominated. But the reason for the amendment is that I think at this particular, doing something this drastic as we're proposing to do here, which I approve of, after this many years, is going to be pretty chaotic if we do it this close to this particular election. Hence, the amendment is simply put it off until the next election, so everybody knows what the rules are from the very beginning and can take it from there.
Representative Meekins.
Speaker, I oppose the amendment for two reasons. One is I think that it makes the main amendment, Amendment Number 2, more palatable, and I'm deadly opposed to the original amendment. I don't want to make it any more palatable by putting it off into the future. Sometimes people have votes for something they're opposed to if it takes place sometime in the future, and I think we don't want to increase any chance that this amendment might pass. Secondly, the amendment to the amendment is essentially an effective date, and therefore I think any reasonable ruling would require that it have the votes of an effective date, so that even if we passed it, and then in the chance that the amendment passes, people thinking that it's not going to take effect this election, that either this body could fail that effective date, or even if we passed it, thinking that we now have a change in the primary system that's not going to take effect for another election into the future, that the Senate, when they're asked to concur in our amendments, can fail to concur in the effective date, and under the current interpretation of the way things go, of course, it keeps changing, that would mean that it would still go to the governor with just without the effective date being effective. So what you'd have is you'd have this amendment in it, and you'd have it take effect this election. And I don't think that even some of the proponents of this would like that. And you're giving the decision on that to the Senate, or at least to 14 members of this body rather than a majority. They can decide when this goes in by accepting this amendment. They can then kill the effective date, and there you are with it taking effect when the bill takes effect. I don't think that we should give the Senate the ability to choose which election this becomes effective in, and I certainly don't think we ought to make the amendment any more palatable, because I think it disenfranchises over a majority of the people in this state who want to be able to choose the people they want to vote for. And it makes no sense whatsoever for somebody who, you know, when we admit that party labels don't mean a lot, that you can have somebody who's very liberal running as a Republican, you can have someone, for instance, like a recent lieutenant governor candidate who admitted that he was correctly classified as a liberal and who most people suspected were going to file as a Democrat. That person is now on the Republican side. You've got Democrats that are more conservative than Republicans and vice versa. The labels don't mean a lot in this state. So when you have someone who's running for governor, that's probably the first thing on the ballot, and it's the first choice somebody's going to make. And when they pick their favorite gubernatorial candidate, wherever he happens to be, they've got to stay in that column. And that's not freedom of choice. That's forcing people to vote for a limited selection of people. And it makes no sense. So I think that the amendment itself is very bad, and the amendment to the amendment, to the extent that it makes it any more palatable by putting it off into the future, is a very bad idea. And in the last point, again, being that since it is an effective date, it really gives a lot of uncertainty because it gives the Senate the hammer.
Representative Cotton? State your point, Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I think that the previous speaker spoke to the merits of the bill, which is very fine. A lot of people have different opinions on this, but I think that he was out of order when he speculated as to what the outcome of the bill might be in the other body, speculated as to how they may manipulate the vote on an effective date. I think I was out of order. It had nothing to do with this amendment.
Representative Fanning.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I too, of course, speak in favor of the amendment to the amendment, but for some different reasons than the other sponsor of the amendment. I think the previous speaker, whose remarks were questionably in or out of order, pointed out exactly why we need this amendment and the amendment to the amendment. He used as the primary reason why you should vote against the amendment to the amendment a bunch of political tactics relative to the number of votes required to adopt this measure, the number of votes required to adopt the final measure, the number of votes required to adopt the effective date in this body, the other body, and by the administration. Mr. Speaker, that is exactly how today the primary elections in Alaska run. They are not for what primary races are supposed to be for, and that is for a particular party to decide which of its candidates it wants to place in the general election. In other words, he argued not on the merits, just as in Alaskan primary races today, people frequently from various parties use that primary not to decide who in their party they want to race, but to try and influence and prevent the top contender of some other party from ever entering the general race. What an interesting point to prove that, I think, as everybody well knows, in the 1980 general Senate race, there was an increase by 200% of the number of Republican voters from the primary race and the general race. Obviously, crossovers are not new. That was a prime example of it. But I don't think, as the other sponsor thinks, that this is endorsing party systems or making individuals specifically responsible to two political parties. Mr. Speaker, I've always been one who feels that Alaskans vote for individuals, and I would hope that they continue to do that. And those individuals are not in any way required to participate in the primary system. And they can, of course, and still have full access to the general system, to the general elections. And so I don't think that this is just good for the party system. I think that this helps put the best man forward in the general election. I think that that's the purpose of the primary elections, and I would urge adoption of the amendment.
Are you ready for the question? Question is, Representative...
Speaker, could we have the amendment read one more time?
Yes. Will the clerk please read the amendment to amendment number two?
The amendment to amendment number two is add this section takes effect on January 1st, 1983.
Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the amendment to amendment number two be adopted? Representative Vasca?
Parliamentary inquiry, Mr. Speaker. Are you going to require 27 votes for this amendment or 21?
21 votes for the amendment. A majority of those present. There's 40, although there are 40 people on the floor. Representative Brown?
Speaker, continuing the point of parliamentary inquiry, but then if the amendment does pass, would there procedurally have to be a vote on the amendment language as an effective date clause after passage of the bill?
That's correct, Representative Brown, and that takes 27 votes. Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall the amendment to amendment number two be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 15 yeas, 25 nays.
The amendment to amendment number two has failed to be adopted, which brings us back to amendment number two. Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall the House adopt amendment number two to the House State Affairs Committee substitute for committee substitute for Senate Bill 299? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 17 yeas, 23 nays.
The House has failed to adopt amendment number two. Will the clerk please read the next amendment?
Amendment number three by Representative Rogers, Hurlburt, and Bettysworth. Page 2, line 27, insert new section 4 to read. And I believe this has been distributed.
A copy of this amendment should be on your desk, Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, I'd move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the amendment.
There is objection, Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, this amendment would allow Alaska to have a majority governor in the coming year. The existing law is a plurality race, and if you have three candidates on the ballot, it could take only 34% to get elected. If you have four candidates, it could take only 26% to get elected. This bill, this amendment, would require 50% plus one to get an election for governor. Otherwise, it'd be a runoff. It's a short time period for the runoff, but that is required by the Constitution, since the Constitution says that the governor should be sworn in December. Mr. Speaker, we have a situation right now where we have a minority governor, and I believe that this amendment would help to take care of that problem. It does have the editorial support of newspapers in both Anchorage and in the Kenai Peninsula. It would take care of the problem we have. We know there are going to be at least three candidates on the ballot in November. There very well could be more than that, and we could end up with a minority governor. I think that this is a fair way of taking care of that problem. All of us from Anchorage and Fairbanks know that in our cities, if no one wins a percentage, though in those I think it's 40% often, if no one gets that percentage, there is a runoff. I think this is a valuable provision and urge members to vote yes.
Representative Martin.
Thank you very much, sir. Mr. Speaker, here again, this is far too short of notice for the average citizen to be able to participate in this election. A runoff election in 2 weeks after certification is very, very short notice for the large amount of students that we have out of state that do participate in elections, the large amount of military people that participate. They may be in foreign countries or they may be in our sister state, older people that have gone out. Here again, a large percentage, and that very important percentage, because many elections in this state have been won, well, by as few as five votes, or by as few as maybe one-half of 1%. And here again, a few people may have the upper hand. We know in runoff elections that a majority of the people do not participate. It happens in the mayoral elections, in Anchorage time and time again. In special election like we just had last week, very few people participate in these extra elections. And therefore, I don't think we're going to end up with a majority vote, even with a runoff election with such short notice.
Representative Metcalf.
Mr. Speaker, we had a bill addressing exactly this subject in the State Affairs Committee, which we took up for consideration. And when I took it up, I felt it was a good idea. But the Division of Elections clearly pointed out to us that in the event we were to do this, we would have no choice but to do it through the use of a constitutional amendment because of the time between the election day, which is called for in the Constitution, and the time at which the governor has to be seated, which is also called for in the Constitution. There is has been a Supreme Court ruling that if an absentee ballot was mailed on the day of the election, it must be counted. And the amount of time that the ruling required to wait for that mail to come in and the other things that must happen with the Division of Elections precludes this from happening. It is not physically possible for this to occur within the time frame that is allowed between the day of election and the seating of the governor. And it was clear to myself and the majority of the members of the committee that it was not possible for this to happen. I think that the majority of the committee, in my opinion, probably favored the idea, but the bill never left the committee for that reason.
Representative Herbert?
Well, Mr. Speaker, that looks to me like looking for ways not to do this. But as to the previous speaker, it was from Anchorage over there, was talking about the majority not participating in elections. Well, that's their fault. Every governor should have at least 51%, a majority of the people who voted for him, so they could say that I voted for him or I didn't. He should have the majority of support or not at all to be governor, and I strongly support this amendment.
So further debate, are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 3 to the House State Affairs Committee substitute for committee substitute for Senate Bill 299? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 15 yeas, 24 nays.
The House has failed to adopt Amendment Number 3. Will the clerk please read the next amendment?
Amendment Number 4 by Representative Clarkson, page 1, line 24, delete section 2.
Representative Clarkson?
Mr. Speaker, I move the amendment and ask unanimous consent.
There is objection, Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, Section 2, of course, you can look at it there and see what it says. My concern with Section 2 is that it gives an open license for anyone to harass an otherwise qualified voter into not voting. The history, Mr. Speaker, of this is that this provision, an almost identical provision, was in the statutes prior to the major revision of the election statutes in 1980. That provision was taken out in 1980, and now this bill would place it back in the statute books, essentially as it was before that revision. Mr. Speaker, I think that the provision in Section 2 is unnecessary, and as I indicated, would open the polling booths up to the possibility of harassment. And let me try to describe what could happen under this. Mr. Speaker, in my precinct, for example, I could walk in to the, or I could get a friend, for that matter, to walk into the polling place and to sit there. I have no official status. That is, I'm a person qualified to vote on line 27. And I could sit there, and because I know my precinct very well, Mr. Speaker, I could pick out every potential voter who walks in the door who's registered as a Republican that I knew. And I could say to that person, I question your right to vote. And simply by doing that, Mr. Speaker, I would require that person to do the following things in writing, Mr. Speaker. Those things appear on the top of page 2. I would require that person to state that he or she meets all the qualifications of a voter, that the person is not disqualified for some reason, the person is not voted in the same election, the person has to state the place from which he came immediately before living in the precinct in which he now offers to vote. And fifth, the length of time of that residence in the former place. Well, Mr. Speaker, I suspect there are a substantial number of people that faced with that type of harassment will simply say, baloney. I've got to go to work. I'm not going to stand around and be humiliated like that. I've lived here for 20 years. What's going on? I'm being harassed, and therefore I'm not going to vote. Which, of course, accomplishes my purpose. I've stopped Republicans from voting, which I could make the argument that it will help my election. Now, Mr. Speaker, some people say that, well, we need some procedure to deal with those folks, and in fact, there is an existing procedure. If we repeal this section, there is an existing procedure for questioned balloting for people that do not appear to be qualified when they appear at the polling place. That's in the existing statute. I contend, Mr. Speaker, that that's an adequate procedure. We don't have to add this additional open-ended procedure. One person, when I discussed this, Mr. Speaker, looked at the language on line 28 and said, well, you can only do that if you have good cause. So if I'm sitting there and calling on every Republican and that I have to show good cause. Well, the way it works, Mr. Speaker, that provision is all but useless, because this provision that I'm trying to take out says that you cannot vote until you sign the written statement asking all those questions. Read the last sentence of Section 2. You cannot vote. Now, the question then is, Mr. Speaker, when do we get to decide whether I had good reason to do that? Well, that's sometime later, I suspect, and it would be decided either by the Director of Elections or some sort of administrative procedure to say whether I had good reason to do it. The point is, it is not going to be decided right there on the spot. That person, based on my claim, either has to sign the form giving all of that information, delaying that person, harassing that person, or they don't get to vote. And it's not limited to election judges and election clerks. It's every watcher and any other person qualified to vote could do this for any person. I think that opens a very substantial possibility of harassment. I think it's a bad idea. There are existing procedures to take care of questioned ballots and questioned eligibility, and I think we ought to take this section out, and to do that, we need to vote for this amendment.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I oppose this amendment. I believe it was some 3 years ago we had before us Senate Bill 1, which was a rewrite of the state election laws. That time, the prime sponsor of this bill was the chairman of the committee that chaired the rewrite of the state election laws. My understanding is at that time that this was existing law, and it was reenacted and repealed inadvertently in the statute that we had passed at that time. Thus, we have the language before us now.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I am familiar with situations where that, while it was existing law, was used in the way described by the member from District 7. And I think that if it were tested under certain circumstances, there could be constitutional problems. And also, I'm amazed that it ever passed muster with the feds with regard to the question of conformity of our election laws with the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Mr. Speaker, this is... Let me give a further example or elaborate further on the example of the member from District 7. If this is done on a uniform basis, you start doing it at 8 o'clock in the morning, particularly in a gubernatorial year in the general election, there's a lot of interest in the election and maybe a better voter turnout than usual. The average urban precinct, you're going to have a whole line of people. So that if you had, say, two people playing tag team trying to spot every Democrat or every person with red hair or every Republican or anything that they could trump up a reason to question their ability to vote and require this procedure, they could slow down the voting procedure such that you could have a special line. Okay, I have just questioned your ability to vote. There it is. Whether I have good cause or not is going to be decided later after your right to vote is gone for another 4 years as far as the governor race is concerned. Meantime, you go over and stand in this line. There are already 20 people in that line. You're 15 minutes late for work anyway. Or you just don't want to be harassed anymore. It's an easy trick. I've seen this sort of stuff done at election places in Alaska. And I've been watching, I've been kind of a poll watcher, informally and formally, for my party on and off for 20 years. And I've seen this kind of hammer used. It's a very effective, dirty way of affecting an election. There's a certain kind of individual, Mr. Speaker, that usually claims that unless we have an affidavit from God that somebody is a good lily-white voter, that they can't vote. And that particular procedure has been used historically in Alaska really to disenfranchise people, but always under color or claim of saying that we are somehow sanitizing the voting procedure and avoiding voter fraud or something like that. And I think that whether it is claimed that this was taken out of the law as a result of a drafting error or not, I think it never should have been there and we should delete it. I support the amendment and I hope people will vote on the merits.
Question.
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I probably should have yielded because probably somebody was going to give a good reason why this was in here. Because it used to be in the statutes, I don't think is a good reason to put this on here. I wonder, one question to the chairman of the State Affairs Committee, did anyone talk about the constitutionality of this question? Is it a legitimate procedure to go through the motions that have been described by the previous two speakers? Seems unreasonable to me. And I haven't heard any good reasons why it should be in there, why any qualified voter ought to be able to stand in front of a person before he receives his ballot and challenge him. Even if his name appears on the computer readout, everything appears to be in order, the way I read this, that can happen, and I'm not sure why it should. And I'd appreciate hearing some testimony or evidence as to why we should allow this type of harassment to take place.
Representative Meekins?
Speaker, I don't think it's harassment at all. I think what we're asking for is people to be qualified to vote. We're trying to prohibit the possibility of people voting more than once or voting improperly or our non-eligible voters voting. I think we've seen a lot of that because of the closeness in Alaskan elections, some of them being determined by a few votes. I mean, literally one or two or five votes, that every vote really counts. And a lot of times people know that they're going into close elections, and therefore there's an incentive for people to try to manipulate the outcome of elections, especially if the policing procedures are very lax. There was an editor of the Anchorage Daily News who wrote an article several years ago attesting to the fact that he voted twice in a recent election. He wrote an article right after the election saying, I just voted twice, and it sure was easy. Nobody even asked me if any questions whatsoever. And there's obviously, it's a very easy thing to do. We saw a lot of ballots disqualified after they were questioned. But I think that, you know, let's look at it rather than talk about harassment and that type of thing. As a practical matter, how often is it going to be that an election judge or a person who's at the polling booth is going to let a representative or somebody stand there and question 400 people just arbitrarily? That's not going to be considered good cause. Obviously, you could do it arbitrarily three or four times, maybe before the election supervisor there would stop listening to you. So maybe there's a chance for a minimum amount of harassment. But obviously, that a person has to be so inclined and has to be willing to risk the possibility that that's going to come out in the paper and hurt the future chances of anybody in the election. So I think that, you know, what are the real chances that somebody's going to do that? Not very likely. And what are they asking for? Well, read it on page 2. It says that the person has to attest to the fact that he's qualified to vote and that he's not disqualified to vote and that he hasn't voted already before in this election. Well, I don't think that's too absurd. I don't think it's a very harassment to have the guy say, yeah, I'm qualified to vote and I'm not disqualified to vote and I haven't already voted. That seems pretty reasonable. He's also got to state the place where he previously lived before coming to this precinct. That makes sense. That's very reasonable. I know that there are literally thousands of people who are on the computer list and are there improperly because they move around and they don't change their voter registration. We all know that. We all probably know several people that vote in precincts that they don't live in, just because it's easier to do that than it is to go through the hassle of changing your registration. So getting that information and cleaning up our computer list makes good sense, and it's certainly not any kind of harassment for a guy to say where he resides. That's something you have to do when you register to vote, and people don't consider that a harassment. And they have to sign this affidavit, have to sign it, and I think there'd probably be a penalty of perjury. I think that's fine. I think it's great that if a person who actually is trying to cheat would have to think twice because he'd be guilty of a potential charge of perjury if he tries to sign this affidavit if somebody questions him. I think that's proper, and I think that would make a lot of people think twice before they go around voting several different times in one election or any kind of abuse like that. And I think it's pretty clear that that kind of thing happens now, and it could happen in the future. I think it's a good idea to have this kind of thing when we've got elections in this state. And if you just think about it, we have extremely close elections. They've been tested in court. People file suits back and forth. There are certain people that still think they won the race for governor that don't happen to be governor right now. We have that kind of situation. We've seen manipulation and abuses of all kinds in elections, and we need to clean that up and guarantee to the voters of this state that there aren't abuses going on, that the thing is properly done, and that it's being policed, and that there's the ability to keep people from abusing the election process. I think this helps.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm opposed to this amendment. Basically, outside, in a democracy, outside of the right to life, the right to vote is probably one of the most cherished things we have. But then you also have to protect that vote to make sure that you have an equal vote next to the next person. Some of the harassment the gentleman from Fairbanks said that he has seen happen. Well, I'm sorry if that happens in his area. I haven't seen it in my area of District 8, and in downtown, the gentleman's threat that, he knows every Republican. It sounds like Big Daddy watching you, and if he would threaten every Republican, that's a kind of a shame. The thing is that what I have seen in our areas is that people have taken advantage of the openness that used to be in Anchorage. I have found literally after the election, when it was too late, the first two times I lost, one time by 40 votes, I found at least 100 votes of empty trailers, a vacant lot, and all kinds of things, and I wish I had been a little more conscientious of others who may cheat me out of my vote by voting two or three times someplace else. This does not allow every person to challenge someone. First, in the new election codes or regulations that were passed out, I believe, last week, it made it very clear that persons who will be judges, clerks, and those who are participating in petitions will be identified. Then also, other persons that are in that precinct, certainly with redistricting, we know each other fairly well in a small precinct, but I don't know the whole district that well personally. We do know when you suddenly hear of a trailer court that maybe is completely vacant, you do know when somebody's using a mailbox number, or you do know someone that you may be in line with, and ahead of them they said, oh, I live at so-and-so apartment and happen to be next door to you, and you know the person that lives there. So you do have the right to challenge. I think it's a good amendment to clean it up and protect my equal vote. Thank you.
Representative Vasca.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in favor of the amendment to delete Section 2. Mr. Speaker, at the present time, the U.S. Congress is dealing with this Voting Rights Act of 1965, which basically is saying stop harassing the voters. The Constitution protects people's civil rights and people's right to vote. I trust the voters enough in the state to elect public officials on the basis of how they will represent them. That's easy enough to say. We don't have to go through the extent of asking people specific questions at the voting booth, not just the election judges, but anyone can be there to harass voters as they come in. It's a very difficult thing to explain harassment. Harassment can mean probably moving in from Tulloch and moving to Hillside Anchorage and being harassed by someone who doesn't speak Yupik. Because someone says, well, where did you live the last 6 weeks? Well, maybe 5 weeks ago I just moved to Anchorage to Hillside Muldoon or somewhere. And the election judge or the election supervisor or the person watching the balloting says, well, I challenge the fact that you don't live here in Muldoon. That's harassment. You can't explain that to the individual who may not speak English as well as others, that maybe he did live in Tulloch 5 weeks ago and cannot vote. Residency requirements for voting is only 30 days. Is the person harassing the individual going to say that? Of course not. The whole idea is to have people enjoy their right to vote, not to harass them. I think if people are willing to come to the ballots and to vote, they should be allowed to. The representative from downtown Anchorage across the aisle is correct. There are methods to prove that people are residents, that people are voting in the precincts they should be voting in. Let's not restrict the privilege, the right, not the privilege, the right to vote in the state by putting undue restrictions on people who want to vote. Sure, we have close elections in this state. That's good. That brings out a lot more people because their vote then makes a difference. 37 votes in deciding the gubernatorial race of 3.5 years ago is good. It brought out a lot of people. Question ballots will always be there. They can be thrown out. That in itself will force people to make sure they're registered, make sure they have their cards, so that they can practice their right to vote. I am in favor of deleting this section.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, just quickly a response to a couple of the people who were opposing this amendment. First of all, there was a statement that it did limit the number of people who could question a person, and just as long as there's no misunderstanding here, it is any qualified voter in the precinct. That's pretty broad, and I don't want anybody to think that it's just the election judge or anything like that. The second statement made by my fellow representative from District 7 was that good reason can be determined by the election person who's there at the polling place. That's not what it says. That's not what's going to happen, in fact. Therefore, I don't think you're going to stop this type of harassment that I'm concerned about at the time. The final point, Mr. Speaker, again, is that we have an existing procedure to deal with the abuses that my fellow representative from District 7 talked about. We have the question ballot procedure. The reason it's such a good procedure is because it allows the person to vote but segregates their vote so they can check into it later. That's the defect in this procedure. And under this procedure, if there's any problem with it, they just don't vote. Therefore, they lose their vote. The existing procedure is perfectly adequate.
Are you ready for the question,
Speaker?
Representative Meekins?
The only time they lose their chance to vote is if they won't sign the oath that, that they're qualified to vote. I think if somebody's not willing to do that, they shouldn't be allowed to vote. That's the only time they can't vote. And it isn't true what was alleged that it says the election judge and election clerk shall question if the questioner has good reason. And the way you read that is that if they don't have good reason, then the election judge and election clerk shall not question. So I think it is the case that they have the decision on that.
Representative Rogers?
And, to complete the words left out by the previous speaker, and every watcher and any other person qualified to vote in the precinct may question if the questioner.
Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 4 to the House State Affairs Committee substitute for Committee substitute for Senate Bill 299? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 15 yeas, 24 nays.
The House has failed to adopt Amendment Number 4. Are there further amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Clarkson? House, please stand at ease. During the at ease, there was another amendment placed on the clerk's desk, Amendment Number 5. Will the clerk please read the amendment?
Amendment Number 5 by Representative Clarkson, page 1, line 26. Delete, quote, comma, and every watcher and any other person qualified to vote in the precinct may question, unquote.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the amendment.
There is objection. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, you can pretty much see those, I didn't pass around the amendment, but once again, after the word question, delete all the language down through question on line 27 so that it's the election judge and the election clerk who have the right to question voters of suspected qualification. I think that eliminates the major harassment concern I'm talking about, since these are people who have an official position and official responsibilities, and I think it eliminates some of the concern about repealing any procedure for questioning ballots. The question raised by the Judiciary Chair about the fact that it was inadvertently repealed. We would leave the section in, but not allow any registered voter to do it for harassment purposes, and I'd ask that the amendment be adopted.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I could support part of that amendment, but it goes beyond what I think is proper. Presently, the political parties of the state appoint poll watchers, and what his amendment would do would not only repeal the part on any qualified voter, but the poll watchers that are appointed by both the political parties to watch the process to see that it stays fair on both sides. So if he would care to amend his motion to delete just the qualified voter, I could support that, but not the total amendment.
Representative Meekins?
Speaker, I also think something could be worked out. I don't think this is it. The addition to the problem just mentioned, I think it, the way it's structured, it doesn't quite work, because I think what the section is trying to say is that certain people can question, can bring up the question, and then the officials there should you know, proceed with the questioning and should submit the guy to all this signing and stuff like that under certain circumstances, that being when there's good reason to believe it. But now it's going to read that the election judge and election clerk shall question a person attempting to vote if the questioner. Now, the questioner originally applied to these watchers and the other qualified persons of vote. Now it applies to the officials themselves, which as a structural matter, I think doesn't make a lot of sense. So it doesn't talk about who's questioning. It just says that every judge and election judge shall go ahead and question this if the questioner has good reason to suspect the questioned person is not qualified to vote. I think we should work on it, reconsider this and work on it. If the person's really interested, maybe we could work something out, but I don't think this does it.
House, please stand at ease. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, there have been some questions raised about
how big a loophole or whether the watchers themselves would be a substantial loophole. I think we need some time to take a look at that question. What I'd like to do is withdraw the amendment and with the idea of maybe submitting it under reconsideration tomorrow. I move and ask unanimous consent that amendment, whatever it is,
number five. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Does the clerk have further amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the House State Affairs Committee substitute for committee substitute for Senate Bill 229 be considered be advanced to third reading, placed on final passage, and engrossed.
That's 299.
Senate Bill 299.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Will the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 299, State Affairs, Amended House, entitled, An Act Relating to Elections and Providing for an Effective Date.
Is there debate? Representative Martin?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to vote for the bill, but mainly with the consideration that the gentleman from downtown Anchorage said that the bill will be reconsidered. And I hope other members have the opportunity to look in page 2, section 20, I'm sorry, line 20, subsection B, that kind of disturbs me. And I think it may have been good intent to this, but it seems like after 15 days, no vote will be counted unless it's within the hands of the director of election. And here again, it seems to me that a lot of people may be disenfranchised from their voting. Some time ago, I know from Dime Me, they used to have a mail run that's only so often, once a week or once every week. I don't know what it is, the representative next to me would know, but perhaps the air flight is such that the director does not get these votes in time. Also, you may remember that Governor Hammond, when he last won, they found some votes in a locker or a closet almost a month after the election. All those people would have suddenly been disenfranchised. Certainly, one of our senators that won by 5 votes, most of those were military votes. And the key question there was that they were stamped in time in their overseas base, but they did not get here in time. And it's those few votes, those absentee votes, which are most important in this state when you win by less than 1% of a vote. So in reconsideration, I'll vote for the bill, but I sure hope that some people consider this and give good reason why it's in there. Otherwise, they'd like us to delete it.
Representative Meekins?
Speaker, I think we should vote against this piece of legislation. There's a lot of things in here which are probably good ideas, but they're not imperative. In fact, almost all of this bill has already passed the House in a form of a House bill. So even if this bill died, most of this, most of what's in here could pass the legislature this year without much problem. The problem I have with it is the amendment we adopted by a fairly large majority, but I don't think it got enough debate personally, and that was to essentially make the Libertarians a political party in this state. Again, part of that is an effective date that either this body on reconsideration or the Senate could fail to, getting out of order here.
The other body would be a better word, and I think you are getting into motives.
Thank you, Ms. Speaker. I'm just trying to not violate the rules.
Thank you.
Apologize for that. In any case, there's an effective date here, and there are some problems with effective dates that other people and myself have alluded to, and I think that's a problem. So because of that, I think that the amendment is I don't think it's good, and I think it far outweighs anything else that's good in here, so I think we ought to vote it down.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to state for the record that in the Code Revisers Bill that this House passed, House Bill 591, that sections 34, 36, and 37 are in that bill, and they are the same sections that presently rest in this bill.
Representative Moss.
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to vote against it because I think we've got a turkey here that either needs to have some feathers pulled or some added.
Is there further debate? Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall House State Affairs Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 299, amended House, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, may lock the roll.
Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 14 yeas, 23 nays.
The House State Affairs Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 299, amended House, has failed to pass the House. Representative Malone.
Speaker, give notice of reconsideration of my vote on Senate Bill 299.
Notice of reconsideration has been given by Representative Malone on his vote on Senate Bill 299. Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, I just want to add that if the majority is just going to keep on trotting these Senate bills out here and defeating them, we're just going to withhold our cooperation from now on.
Will the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
Committee substitute for Senate Bill number 548 by the Finance Committee entitled An Act Relating to the Medical Indemnity Corporation of Alaska, AS 2188. Labor and Commerce Committee had the bill under consideration. The committee recommended do pass. Do pass is signed by Representative Martin. Representative Martin, Chairman, concurred in by Bylsma and Randolph. The Finance Committee also had the bill under consideration and reported it back as follows. Adams, Chairman, signed no recommendation. Cotton, Fuller, and Chuckluck, no recommendation. Bettysworth, Carney, and Montgomery signed do pass.
Are there amendments?
I have no amendments, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee substitute for Senate Bill 548 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, placed on final passage.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Will the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
Committee substitute for Senate Bill number 548 by the Finance Committee entitled An Act Relating to the Medical Indemnity Corporation of Alaska, AS 2188.
Is there debate? Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, I intend to vote for this bill, but I am a little concerned. We all get copies of the magazine from the State Medical Association. The most recent issue is a full-page ad by the Medical Indemnity Corporation soliciting business. As I recall, this was set up to take care of any people who couldn't get insurance from the private sector. It's a state-funded corporation that's advertising to take away business. I think that they shouldn't be allowed to do that, and would hope that they would desist that kind of advertising.
Is there further debate? Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I was just going to ask somebody if they could explain what the bill does and why it's necessary to pass the legislation.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The bill is in part a technical cleanup, but then also allows extension of medical coverage. Many people realized a few years ago when medical insurance was extremely hard to get, especially for malpractice. And so the MICA insurance was developed under the auspices of the state of Alaska with the proper sanctions thereof. Right now, I think most of the extensions that are going to be allowed here allows the consumers to also have better coverage in other facilities where doctors or with those people, nurses and so on, that they work under. So there's an extension of coverage here in facilities, senior citizens' homes, or wherever a doctor may be working, in health clinics and such like that. There's also provisions on revoking certifications, and then once those have been revoked for necessary reason to protect the citizens, then the individual can file, and under the new director can be sure that they're either qualified or they're disqualified. Generally, we had no opposition whatsoever to the intent of this extension of benefits.
Question. Is there further debate? Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the Finance Committee substitute for Senate Bill 548 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Representative Brown? Representative Brown, yes to no. Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 26 yeas, 9 nays.
The Finance Committee substitute for Senate Bill 548 has passed the House. Will the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
Senate Bill number 250, excuse me, Senate Bill number 650, by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, entitled An Act Relating to Licensing of Foster Homes, Group Homes, Nurseries, and Institutions and Providing for an Effective Date. Health, Education, and Social Services Committee had the bill under consideration. The committee recommended due pass. The due pass was signed by Representative Byrne, Chairman, concurred in by Martin and Smith. Malone had no recommendation. There are no amendments on my desk.
Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Senate Bill number 650 be considered engrossed, advanced third reading, placed in final passage.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Will the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
Senate Bill number 650, entitled An Act Relating to Licensing of Foster Homes, Group Homes, Nurseries, and Institutions and Providing for an Effective Date.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, it's a very difficult bill to read, and if you weren't on the committee, as I'm not, you really don't know what it does, because the entire bill uses the drafting method of amended by adding something to read, amended by adding a new section to read, is repealed and reenacted to read. So it's not easy at all to know how much this is a change from existing law. If somebody who's familiar with the bill could explain that and walk us through it, I'd really appreciate it. Otherwise, I have no idea what I'm being asked to vote for here unless I had attended the committee hearings, and I don't serve on that committee.
Mr. Speaker, I'll respond to Representative Brown's request. The bill is relatively simple in content, actually. It provides essentially three changes in the existing law. One, it lets the department license these homes on a biennial basis rather than annually, which cuts down a lot on their labor because they have something over 1,000, I think it's 1,100 of these various homes or facilities that they have to inspect and license every year. So this would cut down on their work quite a bit there. There's a tremendous turnover in them, too, of almost 50% each year. And that seemed to be a very reasonable thing to do, and we agreed to do that. The second one was to authorize the department to waive some of their regulatory standards from time to time when it was appropriate, and that seemed to be the proper thing to do, and we agreed. And the third thing was to establish some parameters for provisional licensing of those homes that they wanted in statute rather than regulations, and we agreed to do that. And that was the essence of that bill. I don't think there's anything else in that bill. And it was a departmental bill originally submitted at the request of through the governor. And as far as I know, there's been no opposition to the bill in any respect all the way along. Thank you.
Representative Moss.
Mr. Speaker, perhaps the previous speaker can answer this question. Maybe they do it already, but the question that I have, are boarding homes for educational students that are moved from one school district to another and they are boarded at a particular school, are they licensed under this thing, or do they have to hold a license or anything like that?
Representative Byrne.
Well, Mr. Speaker, to the best of my knowledge, they're not included under this chapter. I think they're part of the school system and would be licensed there.
Are you ready for the question, Representative Fanning?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think we've just found our first opposition. If that's the case, I have several questions about the legislation. I too was not familiar with it; was not in the committee. So I did look in the statutes and find out what they're changing, and I have them before me. It seemed to me that in addition to what the first speaker explained, that the bill does in fact set up several additional criteria which are not in existing law relative to specific statutes that must be followed now that is questionable and the regulations. For example, if you'll notice on page one, there's a change there that the facility has met the standards for operation as set out in the statutes and the regulations adopted under the statutes. Then in a questionable duplication on page two, it says the department shall issue a provisional license to a new facility if the facility submits to the department an acceptable plan for operation which is in conformity with the provisions of both the statutes and the regulations. If it's in conformity with the regulations and the statutes, then what's the additional requirement relative to an acceptable plan? It seems to me that we have excessive licensing provisions already, and there seems to be some contradiction there. And I guess I'd bring up my other objections, and perhaps the sponsors of this legislation or promoters of it could explain them. One is there's an additional definition added, and it's a facility. And a facility means doesn't mean what I thought a facility meant. Doesn't mean a building. It means the administration, the program, and physical plant of a nursery caring for children, a foster home, a group home, or institution caring for children or dependent adults. When you look in the existing definitions to find out what an institution means, you find that an institution means an establishment providing regular care and services for 11 or more children. When you look at a group home, it means a small establishment providing care and services for 10 or fewer children. I guess I have a question. If that means 10 or fewer, does that mean two? Does that mean one? And does that mean then that babysitters have to be licensed? Is there an exemption someplace? Early on in these statutes, it says that the department may do this, that is, that they may license, but then in the existing law, section 4735.020, a license or permit is absolutely required. And so I wonder if the sponsor of the legislation, the definitions very clearly to me, do not limit the number. They say anything fewer than, both for group homes and foster homes, expand the definition by including this facility. And I wonder if, in fact, it is current state law that anybody who is babysitting one child on a regular basis is supposed to have one of these licenses and permits. And I'd appreciate the response there.
Representative Buchholz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I understand it, the licensing is required if you have five or more children. But five is the number that is required when you are operating a babysitting service.
Representative Fanning.
Yeah, I wonder, that must be obviously in a different statute. Perhaps we could have a brief at ease because it's not in the statute that's covered here.
Representative Rogers, do you have an answer to that?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. On the licensing of daycare centers is where the five comes in. It is elsewhere in the statutes. This does not apply then to the licensing of daycare centers. That's specific. It's five or more who aren't related to the person operating the center, so that it doesn't include that person's own children. This bill does not, as I understand, does not affect the licensing of daycare centers.
Representative Fanning.
Mr. Speaker, that's correct. This does not deal with the licensing of daycare centers. This deals with the licensing of group homes. And anything is considered a group home if there are 11 or fewer children in it. And so I would submit, unless there's an exemption someplace else, the existing law specifically does say that if it's less than 10 people, 10 or fewer children, that under this section of the law, they would have to have a license. If it's a daycare and it's five or more, perhaps they're exempted. But what if it's not a daycare? What if it's, in fact, a group home? I'd like an at ease, Mr. Speaker.
House, please stand at ease. Order. Representative Fanning.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I don't know if everybody's reading their newspapers or what, but I really would appreciate it if people would take note. During the at ease, no one has been able to suggest to me any way whatsoever that in this piece of legislation we are not mandating licensing for any time anybody babysits one child in the state of Alaska as a group home. And I've talked to the people who suggested that there are licensing procedures for daycare, and that is true. But in this statute, we define a group home as an establishment providing care and services for 10 or fewer children not related by blood, marriage, or legal adoption to the foster parent. Mr. Speaker, that's any home in the state of Alaska who on a regular basis takes in one child or two child or three children. Mr. Speaker, this is ludicrous. And I would strongly urge that we defeat the legislation.
Representative Hoffman.
Mr. Speaker, it's a Senate bill.
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, I think I agree with my colleague from Fairbanks that there is a problem, but the problem is not with this bill. What he's reading from on group homes is existing law, and I haven't heard any terrible abuse of this existing law. He also read living with a foster parent. as part of the existing law. So I would say that any home that doesn't have foster parents in it wouldn't apply. It would only be where you have foster parents. And apparently the existing definition of group home is any home with a foster parent with at least one child. Now, maybe that different definition ought to be changed, and maybe that amendment should be to this bill. But the fact that there's a problem with existing law is not a reason to vote against this bill. I think it's a reason that we ought to return to second reading for a specific amendment.
Representative Fanning?
Mr. Speaker, that's partially correct, but it's partially incorrect. This bill does, for the first time ever, define facility and require that in order to get a license for a facility, you must have an acceptable plan, and as per all these other regulations, and facility means administration program, physical plan of a nursery caring for children, a foster home, a group home, or an institution. So this bill does, for the first time, state what a definition of a facility is, including those the previously defined language. And so I would urge we defeat the bill.
Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall Senate Bill 650 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Representative Rogers? Representative Rogers from no to yes. Representative Carney? Representative Carney from no to yes. Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 16 yeas, 20 nays.
Senate Bill 650 has failed to pass the House. The clerk, please, Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to give notice of reconsideration of my vote on Senate Bill 650.
Representative Rogers has given notice of reconsideration for his vote on Senate Bill 650. Will the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
Committee substitute for Senate Bill number 749, my Labor and Commerce Committee, entitled, An Act Relating to Equity Participation and Providing for an Effective Date. The Labor and Commerce Committee had the bill under consideration, and the committee recommended due pass. The due pass was signed by Representative Martin, Chairman, concurred in by Representative Bilesma and Randolph. I have an amendment, Mr. Speaker.
Clerk, please read the First Amendment.
Amendment number one by Representative Rogers. Page 1, line 14. Delete 1 million, insert 500,000. Delete 5, insert 2.
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, I'd move and ask unanimous consent to the adoption amendment.
Yes. There is objection. Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, I'm not even sure why this provision's in the law to start with. What we're saying here is that no bank, credit union, savings and loan, pension fund, insurance company can take a percentage of a company as part of the financial package they put together. The intent of the bill is to open that up a little bit, to allow a bank to assume part ownership of a project, let's say, as part of the financial package. Mr. Speaker, I don't see a reason for us to limit that at all. I don't see why we shouldn't let a financial institution make any arrangement it wants to with a borrower. However, I think that were I to offer an amendment that completely deleted this section, it would probably fail. So I'm trying to at least reduce it and to essentially further deregulate equity participation. Mr. Speaker, where this bill is really going to have an effect is in insurance companies who want to invest in multifamily housing. Right now, the big problem we have with multifamily housing is the interest rates are too high. This bill, if an insurance company can take a partial ownership in the apartment building as part of the package, they can often lower the interest rate. And, Mr. Speaker, as we all know, that can make the difference between building the apartment building or not building it. Essentially, you end up with a similar situation to a shared appreciation mortgage, where the insurance company gets a piece of the action if the value goes up. Takes a part of the loss if the value goes down on the apartment building. $1 million seems like a high limit to me. The 5 years, whatever number we pick there is arbitrary. The purpose of this amendment is then to to open it up a little bit further, I'd urge members to vote yes.
Representative Meekins.
Mr. Speaker, I don't think we should adopt this amendment. I think we should, I think I might be for the act as it's presently constituted, but I'm concerned about making changes on the floor. I think this is a significant change in the way banks work. You know, the banks banks make loans, and other financial institutions make loans sometimes out of their own funds, but mostly out of the funds that are deposited in those banks that are by those of us that, that use them. So it's not really the it's not really the bank's money. They're utilizing the deposits and savings accounts and other things that the people of the state put into those banks. So currently they make loans, and I think we all know that system works pretty good. If they're going to take ownership interest, then I think there's a that raises a lot of questions. Is the loan less secure then, because if they have an ownership, they might make if they get an ownership interest, they might take a greater chance than they would otherwise. That's a possibility. What about competition? Well, you know, these larger loans, there's maybe there's not that many entities that would take these larger loans, $1 million or up. But when you get down to smaller and smaller numbers, there's, I think, the real possibility that where you have kind of a conflict. What if in one case you have two different companies or businesses? One gets a loan, just a regular loan. One gets a loan with a that takes, say, a certain percentage equity. Well, then later on they both come in for an additional loan. Well, how is the bank going to keep this arm's length kind of business going on when one of their partners comes in and asks for a loan, and then their competition to the one that, to the business that they have an equity owner, an ownership interest in, comes in and asks for a loan to compete with the business that they partially own? Well, I think it's obvious that that raises a real question, and that's, I think, a question for the entire bill. Maybe at $1 million in 5 years or more, maybe that protects it to a certain extent. And I think there is a difference in some of these larger loans. At the current question, the current thing that's going on with the interest rates, it's kind of difficult to get some of these larger loans. And maybe to keep business going, we have to make this change. But I certainly wouldn't want it to go down any lower than $1 million. So I'd object to the amendment.
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, again, the main effect is going to be on multifamily housing. Often you'll have on a major project, several banks or insurance companies or mortgage companies participating, and I think this would allow a greater opportunity to fund those. I'd strongly urge yes vote.
Representative Martin.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The intent of the maker of the amendment is very good. However, I think right now go with caution. He asked that, he's mentioned that, you know, we should probably repeal the section completely. And this was asked to those who gave testimony, why not repeal it completely and allow free deliberation going on between lender and loaner and so on. It was mentioned by the gentleman director of the Division of Insurance that they regarded that deleting the law entirely would probably be too massive of a move in reconstructing all the statutes pertaining to this part of the economic world. Right now, it seems like that those who are in the lending business felt that Alaska is being deprived right now of participation, those in the construction, those that need money for apartments and so on, and they're finding ways to get around it by going to Seattle, California, and legal ways to do it. But at the same time, they cannot do it in Alaska. So by opening up the law a little more right now to this degree allows full participation to what is considered kind of a safety guard. If we go any lower or if we appeal it completely, those who are in the financial market, and especially the Division of Insurance, feel that too much leverage might be used on the person with the money to the person that's asking for it. I think the intent is real good of what the gentleman said, but I'd rather go by what others said. Let's go this far right now and let caution be major guidance.
Representative Metcalf.
Mr. Speaker, I may change my thinking after having discussed this with some other people, and I'm sure that if this bill is defeated, it'll probably be reconsidered. But I think that we need to be mindful of what happened with Alaskan Renewable Resources Corporation. And what they did in some cases
was to make loans with commitments for further loans and ongoing projects. And then after someone is well down the path and well committed to completing a project and his entire financial wealth is committed to that, ARC then reneged on some of its loans and did not continue them. And to remedy the problem, ARC asked a participation, an equity participation. And I could see this placing some investors in a very precarious situation. They have reasonably or marginal credit. The bank would move ahead with them in a good market. And as they are continuing their project, the bank would be in a position to cut off those loans. And the remedy to the problem at the time that the person would be faced with, he has an ongoing relationship with a bank. It's hard to go out and establish a relationship with a new bank. And the bank would be able to request that they want an equity in the project to continue making the loans. And it would virtually be at that bank's mercy. Now, this something similar to this is being done in other states, but it's not being done with bank participation. It's being done mostly with investor participation, where an investor makes a deposit of a sizable amount in a bank. That those funds are lent by the bank, and that investor himself takes an equity position in the project to which the funds are lent. But the bank does not have an economic consideration in their determination as to whether to continue or not continue making the loans. And the borrower achieves his lower rate of interest by virtue of the fact that he has requested a lesser interest or lesser rate of return from the bank, and the bank has made the loan, but in exchange for his lesser rate of return, he has received an equity from the end borrower. I think that this is a good idea, but I'm skeptical as to the direction that we're going at this time.
The debate is on Amendment Number 1, which is an amendment lowering the principal amount of the loan from $1 million to $500,000 and the term of the loan from 5 to 2 years. Representative Meekins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just one additional point that I didn't mention is that I think the purpose of this bill is good. It's trying to say that, trying to do something about the current situation because interest rates are so high, some types of projects just don't make good sense. They just don't work economically. You can't borrow the money at the interest rate and make them profitable. Like, for instance, multifamily housing is one example. That's why the state's trying to do something about that in the loan package. However, so what we're saying is, well, maybe you could allow the banks to take an ownership interest in the project, and therefore then they may give the loan because they've got an additional incentive and some additional return coming from their ownership interest. I think that's true, but the reverse of that is also true, or the converse of that, which is that it's possible, I think because we open it so wide open, it's possible that if you had a project that would make economic sense, that would be profitable, and you went to the bank to get a loan, and under the current situation, you could get the loan, and you could start that business and make a profit. It under this bill, it would therefore be possible that no bank would give you the loan unless you gave them part of your business. And I don't think that there's a lot of businessmen, particularly small businessmen, that don't want to have to be forced to give partial ownership of their business to a bank in order to get the loan. And there's no restriction, as I understand it, if we accept this bill, to that problem arising. The only restriction is that it's at least when they try to do that, they're doing it against some fairly big operators because there are people that are asking for $1 million or more. And I think that maybe there's some protection in that. If one of the major hotel owners goes to one of the banks and doesn't want to share his ownership with one of the banks, he probably has other options, and he probably doesn't have to. But if some small restaurant owner goes and wants to put on an additional wing and he can't get the $250,000 loan without giving him 5% of the business, I don't think that's good. So I think the threshold in here is the only thing that's protecting us from some of the potential abuses. I actually feel that we ought to have some language that says that limits this to the cases we're talking about, where the banks can take equity positions, they can take some of your business, if that's the only way it'll go. I don't know if we could write that, but I think that's the intent here. But to allow it so that in any case, anybody want a loan, the bank could do that. I don't think that would happen, but I mean, that is what we're opening up, and I think this $1 million threshold is a protection.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, there is a protection with regard to not all of the situations described by the member from District 7, but the most extreme kinds of examples he could come up with regard to that subset of problems. That is that there is a protection as long as this House does not change its position with regard to another bill that's currently in free conference committee.
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, I was going to make a similar point. The protection for the public is competition and hopefully increased if that other piece of legislation to which we can't refer does survive, increased competition due to additional financial institutions and a check against antitrust.
Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 1 to the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute for Senate Bill 749? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 17 yeas, 21 nays.
The House has failed to adopt Amendment Number 1. Are there further amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute for Senate Bill 749 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Will the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
Committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 749 by the Labor and Commerce Committee, entitled An Act Relating to Equity Participation and Providing for an Effective Date.
Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute for Senate Bill 749 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 31 yeas, 8 nays.
Labor and Commerce Committee substitute for Senate Bill 749 has passed the House. Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on final passage of Labor and Commerce Committee substitute for Senate Bill 749 be considered the roll call and effective date clause.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Will the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
Committee substitute for sponsor substitute for Senate Bill Number 778, State Affairs amended, entitled An Act Relating to Vocational Rehabilitation Programs Providing for the Operation of Vending Facilities on Public Property. Health, Education, and Social Services had the bill under consideration. Committee recommended replace with House Committee substitute for Committee substitute for Sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 778 by Health, Education, and Social Services, and reported it back as follows. Representative Byrne, Chairman, signed due pass, concurred by Cato. Martin and Smith had no recommendation. The committee substitute is before us.
Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the House Health, Education, and Social Services Committee substitute be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
There is objection. Representative Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I think one of the primary changes in the House Committee substitute in the bill as passed by the Senate has to do with the establishment of this vendor committee, and the Senate bill provides, I think, for a broader base committee of participating vendors than the House bill does. As a point of contention in committee, I think that in this case, I would recommend that we're better off with the original Senate bill and would urge the House not to adopt the committee substitute, but to pass the bill as adopted by the Senate.
Is there further debate? Representative Martin.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Chairman, the committee substitute most closely follows the congressional intent for the blind vendors, and it certainly had been heard and reheard and heard again with all people participating in the HES committee, and this is a balanced, well-balanced compromise I would go further and be much stronger than what this is, but I think under democracy it is a good balanced compromise right now.
Representative Carney.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to ask a question of the people that consider this to be a good compromise. Why is it that blind persons are to have a first priority on vending facilities?
Representative Martin.
It began years ago, sir, by a congressional act, I think in about 1942. And it, in the old days, or even when people did have severe handicaps, it was felt that there are legitimate ways in which we can help those, and in this particular case, the blind people, to help themselves. So the Congress allowed legislation that would allow vending facilities in court buildings, post office buildings, and in federal facilities so that they can specifically operate. It's not a millionaire's game or anything like that. We also have special consideration for other groups, old age people and so on, senior citizens, our pioneer status and stuff like that. This is one of the few what you might call special interest group that I wholeheartedly support. They must be given an opportunity to work. If they're willing to work for a living, why not?
Representative Carney.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I have no problem with giving the blind an opportunity. My question has to do with why should the blind have more of an opportunity than other handicapped people?
Representative Martin.
That was part of the crucial question that was asked, and there are other handicapped people that felt that they should have this option to work in these federal buildings. But you're taking this state here, and this is the first state that's trying to fight it, which I find rather ironic. We have handicapped people of different natures. Here they're all fighting for very few jobs. There's only 8 facilities in this state that are now operated by blind people. There are 2 that are going to open in the next few years, and here again, there are blind people waiting for these opportunities. One reason I can rationalize it is that these facilities are specifically set up and programs are set up for blind people to train. And they know where the coffee pot is, they know where the cigars are, they know where the candy bars are, and it just takes a small facility. Other handicapped people, it was stated, it will cost more money to train them, to set up new facilities. Other handicapped people can do a lot of things that blind people can't do, and they get special treatment. So, yes, you know, it's a matter of how we're treating one handicapped person more than another. Well, that person that lost his leg or arm can do an awful lot more than the person that can't see.
Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the House Health, Education, and Social Services Committee substitute be adopted in lieu of the original bill? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
Roll shows 24 yeas, 13 nays.
The House Committee substitute has been